All right, everybody, welcome back to Parenting on Purpose, your podcast for parenting out of the box, where we give you tips and tools to marry your personal development journey with your parenting journey and bring more peace, love, and joy into your home. Speaking of love, we have a tantra master, mom, and author with us today. I'm very excited. All the way, my neighbor from the north, Miss Katrina, is with us. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm so great. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited. I feel like when you introduce someone as tantra, tantric master, tantric teacher, there are so many preconceived notions. So these are my favorite types of episodes because we can really pop some paradigms and learn some things to help us move forward as humans. So can you start by telling us what is tantra? Uh-huh.
Yes, that's the good question. It's funny, you know, in many ways, it's something that obviously we can't describe because it's so big. It's almost like saying, what's yoga? And it's like, well, we know what it isn't, and we know what the West thinks it is, and we know what, you know, it's a huge question. But at its foundation, Tantra is a philosophy. It's a spiritual path that helps us remember how we are both divine and physical at the same time. So for example, in much of the world, we think that we're just physical. And it's funny because even if we know we're not, sometimes we only live that way. Like life is about my career. It's about my family. It's about my fitness. It's about what I eat. It's about my money. And maybe once in a while I go to church, or once in a while I meditate, and once in a while I read something, but really 99% of my life is focused in the physical. And then some people become spiritual and they're like, all that matters is my communion with God. And they are like, money's wrong, sex is wrong, politics is stupid. Wow. I don't go into that stuff. And Tantra says, no, it's all important. Like, it's never about ignoring what is. Like, we are incarnate. This is the miracle. This physical world is the miracle. But to live with that wonderment, you know, to live with the awareness that I really am this like magical being living in this very cool, strange world we live in. How good is that? And yes, that's really the path of Tantra. And if obviously in the West, you know, we like to think it's all about sex because of Sting, because he once told people that he and his wife had sex for 8 hours and he studied Tantra. But somehow
is that like an old rock band? Am I thinking the right thing?
Yeah, literally. Yes, okay. Sting. But the thing is, there's a That's difference hilarious. Between studying Tantra. You could also say, I study Tantra, I am a golf pro. But it doesn't mean Tantra's about golf. Or I study Tantra and I now am an epic whatever. And that's the thing. Sex is part of life. Tantra doesn't poo-poo sex and relationships. It's an absolutely important, magical part of life. And I actually think that the West has sort of cottoned on to the idea that it's all about sex because we're so broken in relationships. We don't know how to connect. We deeply know we want to. In very similar ways with parenting, we deeply know that we are supposed to have the most precious bonds with our children. And yet it's like we're on the wrong foundation to make it happen. Like whatever we've been taught for generations doesn't seem to get us to the connection that we want. And that's why Tantra excites me, because it's a whole different foundation for living, changes how we connect with each other, changes how we see ourselves, changes how we interact with our children. And so it's such good. A great passion for me.
Yeah. I love this. And so we were pre-chatting before the show. And so Katrina has two children and she obviously had her whole journey leading her up to this point. But what I loved about that journey was she found herself, I think in your words, right, in a state of crisis where you were loving being a mom, but it was just like the constant rat race. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to just being off center, unbalanced, out of the flow. And like many things, whether it's a podcast, you know, you pull an angel card, you see something or you meet a teacher, she was put on this path to start to understand a different philosophy of life. And that is what this podcast is all about, is just sharing what those stories and philosophies are, because those stories help people regardless of where they are in life. So I love that. man, there's so many ways I can go. I really want to talk a bit about the masculine, feminine. So when you were originally describing the tantric path, right? What developed in my heart is like the yin yang symbol. It was very much like the dualistic world, the idea of duality, the fact that we're both masculine and feminine, the fact that we're both ethereal and physical, right? And what really embodies life is being the mix of both of those things and all, like encompassing. So let's play a little bit with the masculine, feminine. What do people that come to you, right, because you're a teacher, what do they misunderstand? What is their thought patterns behind what's feminine and masculine versus the maybe more holistic approach? And then anything you want to dial that into parenthood would be super cool.
Yeah. So first of all, we first think that the masculine and feminine are these gendered stereotypes, right? We've lived in a paradigm of separation for a long time, that we're actually very separate. And the masculine and feminine always interacts with each other, but it's sort of at battle with each other because we're separate, right? So for example, in parenting, you know, there's sort of the structure and the chaos. These two things are kind of opposite things. But if we're in separation, the structure tries to control the chaos, right? Mm-hmm. If we, there's the paradigm or the dynamic of giving and receiving, the person in the masculine giving forces the person to receive it. You know, you've got to hear what I have to say. I'm older than you or something like that, right? Sure. And it's like, instead, how do these things happen in union? So what we have to do is we have to back up and understand. Yep. So from a tantric perspective, the divine, however you understand the divine, God, consciousness, the quantum field, however you understand that, is a oneness. This is omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience. This is in the hippie world. We're all one. You know, that's what that means. But it's a oneness. From oneness, we come into duality, where now you and I can have a conversation. I can eat a cookie. You know, there's two things interacting. This is duality. In duality, there are universal energies of masculine and feminine. And what that means is, in order for us to interact, how do we interact? Right? Mm-hmm. Well, this hand grasps this hand. This hand grasping is the masculine universal energy of doing, and this hand is receiving it in the feminine. That's it. Everything interacts with a masculine-feminine interaction. So suddenly, it's not really so much about gender. It's not so much about that. It can be, if we're talking about relationships, it can be, but not necessarily, but that's not really what we're talking about today. But what it does tell us is, say, for example, in parenting, there's the masculine protector of the vulnerable. And this can be inside of us as well. Like that we actually, if we have a strong protector, we are able to be very vulnerable, which means we're able to access the wisdom of our feelings. We're able to access the wisdom of our natural feedback mechanisms inside. And that's okay. We're able to recognize when we're actually wounded and we need some space. Well, that's the role we play with our children. The parents, regardless of gender, are always in the masculine, and the children are always in the feminine, right? There's the dynamic of structure and chaos. Structure, and what's really interesting about masculine and feminine is they are not on a continuum. Like in some yin-yang ideas, it's like, oh, well, yang is white and yin is black, and there's this continuum between light and dark. This isn't masculine and feminine. Masculine and feminine are absolutely different energies. The energy of structure is an entirely different energy than the energy of chaos. So for parents, for example, we are the energy of structure to our children's chaos. And chaos being a very good thing. Chaos is all creation.
It is good.
It is nature. It's the ocean. It's all things come out of this lack of structure. And there is a joy as a parent to, like we talked about earlier in our pre-chat, the thrill of being present with a child's unbridled joy or unbridled fury, right? There's something about it that we're like, this is life, this right here. And I don't have to stop it. I can witness it. I can help them self-regulate. I can help them honor their truth. I can help them. That's the structure. That's the sober mind that witnesses and helps. But you don't stop it, right? You don't oppress it. You don't say, you go to your room until you're feeling better, or until you're fit for company. It's like, no, like, let's go into it. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, and so, and what happens is when we have someone who is able to witness our difficulties, like even if it's a friend, right? Let's say we are very chaotic because maybe we're grieving and we are lost in space, and we call a good friend who's good at being that sober structure, and we call them and say, I just need a friend. And they come over and they sit with us, and they don't try to fix us, and they don't dive into our chaos either and say, oh yeah, when my mom died, I was a mess too. It's like, it's not that we actually stay in our full polarization, and the stronger they are in their structure, the deeper I can dive into my difficulty.
Yeah.
And bond creates like crazy. And when our children know that we will always be that strong place for them, and not in, and it's never about fixing them. It's always about just being this very safe place. It's so just, I'll say one more thing, but I'll say 100 more things, but in this moment, when my kids were young, a friend of mine, she had her kids were teenagers. And so her daughter used to babysit my kids all the time. And one day I was driving her home. She was 16. And I would say, like, she was a cool person. I was never a cool person, so I always watched for cool people. And she was really a very interesting person. And somehow I got talking to her about sex. I do that sometimes. I have no idea how I got there. She looked at me and she says, as if I would have sex without talking to my mom first. And I was like, what? Like, what? Like, you would talk to your mom about having sex before you had sex? Like, so of course I go to my friend, her mom, and I'm like, what did you do with your kids? What did you do that made them trust you so deeply that they would talk to you about something like that? And she was a single mom of three kids, and she really struggled with self-worth. Like, she really struggled as a mom. And she says, you know what? I don't even know what I'm doing in my own life. I have no idea. And she said, so as far as I'm concerned, all I ever wanted to be for my kids was a safe place and the person they could trust beyond anyone else in the world. And that became my mantra as a parent, that the whole world will judge them. The whole world will tell them what they should or shouldn't do. As social media didn't exist then, but social media now would tell you what you should look like and what you should be doing. And, da, 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 da. And I thought, as a mom, all I want to do is be their sanctuary. And that served us so well that, you know, I don't need to judge you. I don't need, because who am I? I was 25 when I had my first, I was 27. Like 25, really? 25 years on earth makes me a wise old sage? Like, really? Like, I'm practically right. The same age as they are.
Exactly. I'm just bigger. Wow. Right. A few more trips around the sun. And I think there's so much that came up as you were going through that. But I think parents, and I'll speak for myself, whether it's from societal influences or an earnest attempt to be what you think is a good parent, right? There's no malice in it. You're doing what you think is appropriate. And this, like, I'm going to go big and then I'll come back in, because this has a lot to do with wholeness within yourself and the intuition, right? Like, you intuit something would be the right solution, but your logic and societal influences tell you differently. So you go that route and you just kind of like, it always just feels like a round peg in a square hole. Because what you're describing to me is very I'll speak for America, very idealistic, where a parent would not interject. And I agree wholeheartedly that we shouldn't. And I've even seen in myself where there's moments where, you know, my 3-year-old will be having a fit and I'll get triggered by it. And then I'll also notice moments if I'm more on my own meditation practice and outside in the earth more and just feeling more whole within myself, where I just say the same situation Say it's we're running to school. It's the same exact catalyst, but I just feel differently about it. I can look at it from with more space and just say, he's allowed to feel that way. He's home with the people he loves. He's being thrust into some cardboard pants and thrown into a metal car and swift away. He's allowed to feel that way. But it's really interesting because I think a lot of times we do interject when maybe we should pause. And I think that has a lot to do with ourselves regulating and just understanding where that comes from. But to dial it back to the masculine and feminine, which I think is so cool for parents, is to understand this differently, not as about gender roles. The woman is the feminine and the male is the masculine. It's like you guys co-create the structure. You're co-creating the masculine. And isn't that okay? This is so fun. Like if we were going to have a Venn diagram right now, because I'm very visual, it's like there's so many layers, right? Now I feel like, what's that movie where the guy's like on the thing, he's like moving it around, Tom Cruise. It was like Minority Report, sorry. But I feel like it's so cool because you have your masculine feminine within your relationship. Then you are a communal masculine to your kids' feminine. Then you could be the feminine at, let's say, a therapy session or a yoga class or wherever you are now going to learn. So you're embodying that portion of it. So this is definitively not black or white or one or the other. This is meant to be all in different areas of your life so you can learn. You just have to like understand just because you are one way in one situation doesn't mean we're multidimensional beings. Doesn't mean you're going to be like that in every situation. That is so fascinating stuff. So with your people you work with, tell me a little bit about where people misinterpret the masculine feminine when it comes to parenting. I know we talked about it a little bit. And then like, how do you help them to start to piece that together so they can show up differently for themselves, which then helps them show up differently for their family?
It's really interesting. So we have a theory in historically in our society that children are tabula rasa. They're like blank slates. Like they come into this world, and as a parent, it's my job to instill the values of our society, to morph them, to mold them into perfect beings. And I say that kind of sarcastically, but we also do it because we desperately want them to be happy because we love them. So we want to make them happy. So we put all the stuff that we think we know into them, but we assume that they're empty. And this is a huge part of the masculine feminine in general, that we believe that the feminine is nothing. The feminine is to be controlled, oppressed, that we have to control our feelings. We have to control our chaos. We can't have wildness. And that somehow the masculine is there to fix the feminine, as opposed to understanding that the feminine is life. Like literally, this is where life comes from. And so it's funny. So like the idea, let's say you were talking about, let's say your three-year-old is having a really bad day and they're just full of difficult emotions they can't handle. And as a parent, our instant reflex is to try to stop them having the feelings. Like we don't like it. So maybe we're going to give them a cookie. Or maybe our parents or grandparents would have sent them to their room and made them learn that this is unacceptable behavior. Then the real question is, my masculine is saying that it's not okay to feel sad. It's not okay to be angry. It's not okay to be frustrated. And then we take that paradigm and we bring it inside our own hearts and we say, so am I not allowed to be angry? Am I not allowed to have a bad day? What happens inside of me if I am actually furious about something? Do I talk myself out of it? Do I criticize myself? Do I don't know, go have a drink or smoke something or go shopping or do something to oppress the fact that I'm actually really hurting right now? And that's where the whole thing becomes, like we talked earlier about how parenting can be this epic journey of self-discovery. Yes. And it's all happening at the same time that suddenly I would watch myself with my kids and I would watch them having a complete meltdown, right? So just backing up. When my kids were 2 and 4, I was sick. I had lumps growing in my breasts. My mom had died of breast cancer. her mom had died of breast cancer. So I was like 29 at the time, and I was one of the oldest women in the family. Everyone had died of breast cancer. So when I got sick, this was a massive turning point for me. A teacher appeared in my life, and he helped me sort of unpack the training that was inside of me that was running down the women's line, right? One of the biggest things was the avoidance of my own feelings, because we are perpetual people pleasers. I want everyone else to be happy. It's okay if I suffer, but everyone else has to be happy. And what that meant was I wasn't allowed to feel my own feelings. And so during this journey, I actually had to warn my husband and say, I have to figure out how to feel my feelings. I don't even know how to. And I'm afraid my pendulum's going to swing so far that way, I may seem like a Looney Tune. So please just give me a bit of breath here, because I am so used to trying to be stoic and perfect. I might appear like crazy. So just give me some. And of course, he had just witnessed my mom dying and stuff. So he was kind of willing to do anything. So I was kind of lucky. So one day, I will never forget, I was walking upstairs. We had a farm. My kids were 2 and 4. They were upstairs and they were fighting about what 2 and 4-year-olds fight about. Like nothing. He touched me and he's got my toy and I don't want it. And I never get, you know, just whatever.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I had a million things on my mind. And I had this bucket of laundry on my hip. And I'm walking up the stairs and I looked at them and they're just picking at each other. And I just lost it. And I pushed I leaned against the wall and I slid down the wall and I just started crying. Aww. Right? I just started crying. And I also, as a mom, never wanted my kids to witness my sadness. I wanted to always have the smiley face on, right? And because I didn't want to be a burden. I didn't want to burden them with my adult issues, right? Wow. And it was so funny because my kids just looked at me and my son toddled over to me and he looked at me and he put his little back against the wall and he slid down beside me.
He put his
hand on my knee and he said, "What's wrong, mommy?" And I said, "I'm just so sad." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm like that too sometimes." And the two of them just curled up on my lap and I just sat there crying. But it was so powerful and what I actually believe, whether this is true or not, I don't know. But what I found was the more I repressed how I felt, it was almost like my kids felt it in the room.
Oh, for sure. They acted differently.
Right? And it's almost like, and the more I smiled, even though what they felt from me was pure sadness, it was almost like they picked at me in order for me to become honest. And it's not like I need to walk around crying or, you know, constantly emoting and not like that. But I'm allowed to have a bad day. And I'm allowed to say to my kids, "I'm tired today. I really can't do this. I'm just going to chillax on the couch for a bit." And it was almost like they were like, "I'm kind of tired too," or whatever. Or if I was angry, they'd be like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I'm so angry right now. I don't even know what to do about it." But I don't throw it on them. Like, I'm not angry and that it gets focused on them. It's just, I'm really angry. And I need to figure this out, or I need to go for a walk, or do you want to come for a walk with me? I just need to like run around for a while. It's like, okay,
beautiful.
You know, you want to go jump on the trampoline? Yeah. Like, let's go jump on the trampoline. And there's something about, again, this masculine feminine inside, when we're allowed to actually be vulnerable, then
and be the feminine, your kids step up.
Right.
Yeah.
But then we actually also develop a strong protector that's healthy inside. And then our children will learn to do the same thing for themselves. You know,
I wrote that down earlier. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I wrote that down earlier when you mentioned that. Like, I've had several guests on that talk about being their own inner child's dad, or they had to talk to their, and then these are like grown men. They're like yoked, just muscles and ripped, and like, you know, wouldn't perceivably look at them and be like, "Oh, he's very spiritual." But they have a practice where they need to address the wounded child within them and be their own divine masculine so that the child within them has a space to heal. We were talking about this earlier where, you know, when you're going over to somebody, someone who's really going through it, and you're just being present for them and letting them really get into their sit in their yuck to feel it, because we are emotional beings. Like, from a scientific level, if you break down our protoplasma or whatever, what did you call it? The plasticide or whatever. Yes, hysterical. When you go at a molecular level, like, we're energy. It's all moving parts here. So we are meant to feel. And if we can have the time to do that, then we can let it go and move on. And I will not say I was always as graceful as you. I mean, I think I'm very polar opposites, where I can be very, very spot on. But when I portioned my poor daughter, when I was first a mom, I was like instant 4-year-old, right? Like, I have zero training and preparation for this. And I think in some way it made me a very good mom, because I realized things and I didn't fall into patterns. But like, there are times where like, I very throat chakra heads podcast host, and I would just get upset and I would just be talking to her. And then I'm like, I just watched her little eyes go from like looking at me to like looking above me. And then one day I was like, what are you seeing? And she's like, just all these red colors and yellows and oranges. I'm like, that is so fascinating, because all I'm trying to do is express myself. And she's, you know, the poor divine feminine, just like oppressively receiving like, and that's the learning together, right? Because so for her, I'd have to be like, when I do that, can you just please hug me and just be like, it's okay, mom. Let's just do it together. And so we'll have times where we just go, like, I've taken her to these, they do this in America, this tells you about our mental state, but they have these places you can actually go and pay money to break things. You get on suits and like protective gear. Yes. And I don't necessarily, doesn't really like do much for me, because I'm a very physical person. I go to the gym all the time, but my daughter, oh my God. I'm like, put on whatever you want, babe. Just, you know, whatever music feels good to you. Like, this hardcore rap music came on. I'm like, okay. And nothing against rap music. I love all music, but it's just, that's not her vibe. And then she's like smashing stuff, and she's like, ah, I feel so much better. I was just sitting there like, but I'm so happy she got a chance to do that. Like, she needed to physically move some energy inside of her and get it out. And now I try and remember that. Thankfully, you try and learn. When my son goes through that stuff, it's like, this boy just needs to move this energy. And they're kids, I feel nowadays, are so intuitive and so smart, so young, that they have access to this whole world, that they're probably processing things that I process at 8 and they have to do it at 3 with the paradigm of a 3-year-old. So I try and like remember that when we're in these moments, and I try and let him, like you said, just work through it. And then by witnessing it, not out of a place of, I'm not going to do anything about this because that's what good parents do, like not out of like control, but just really witnessing it, it heals me. I'm like, wow, I feel better looking at you. You feel better? You know, like, it needed to be done. And you said something a second ago where like, you just kind of crumbled. And I've had this happen with both Shekinah and Gabriel. And I just don't know what to do. And I don't want to yell, and I don't want to get upset, because it's not the right thing to push my repressed emotions onto them. So I just get like sad. And the immediacy by which they step up and swoop in as the underlying backbone and structure and empathy, it's amazing, right? So it just goes to show you, parents, right? Like, perfection is a fallacy. We're really here to learn and be earnest. And I think what you mentioned with your son and daughter, which I thought was a brilliant point, what kids are looking for is authentic connection, authenticity. And when you're smiling and you're pretending all is good in the hood and you're walking around, but you really know inside you're unwhole, your kids can feel that. And my mom used to tell me something when I was a little kid, like if there was ever someone, like a kid acting out, they're like, oh yeah, that's probably acting what's going on at their house. And they're trying to work through those emotions. And I never really thought about that till I became a parent. And then my kid started doing it, and I was like, what's going on in my house? I got to work through. But you know, they want you to be authentic, and that's what they know is truth. And so when we're untruthful, by consciously or subconsciously, I think you're right. They are going to know how to pull those strings to make that come out. And if we just let them do it, it'll be over a lot faster. Everyone will be a lot wholer. This is fascinating stuff. So you gave a great tip earlier, and I want to make sure that people got it. When, and you won't always notice it, right, guys? I've been in the situation where after the fact I've already yelled and I'm like, dang it, I did it again, bro. Like, I did not want to do that. And then I'll apologize to my daughter. I'm definitely an apologetic mom. I have the most amazing parents ever. I am so lucky. I could not tell you two times in my entire life my mom said the words, "I'm sorry," to me. I have no problem with it. It's just not who she is. And she, to be fair, if Mother Teresa had children, like, my mom is incredible. she's not as like, I don't think she has much, you know, pent up as I do. She's awesome. But, you know, we all mess up. But I'm a very like, say sorry to my kids kind of person. But like, how the thing that you mentioned is like, when you get into that phase where you're saying something or you're about to react, you pause. When you can consciously see that it's happening, because you will, the more you focus on it, you'll consciously recognize it more and more, and you bring it into your heart. I love that. And you just give it 14 seconds of space, right? To just internalize it and say, is this me or is this really them? Do I not have the ability to feel these emotions? Then why would it not be okay for them to? And I think that gives the parent the permission to just let it work in them and on them, as well as in front of them, coming out through their kids, so that they can all kind of come to homeostasis. I just thought that was a brilliant, brilliant tip, and I wanted to make sure we hit on it.
Yeah, I'd love to actually add to that, because, you know, Tantra... Please. Is a spiritual path. And it's really important to, you know, ask ourselves, like, what does that even mean? And this is why in Tantra and yoga, in original yoga, meditation is such a powerful tool. And not just because you're supposed to just be able to sit. That's not it. But it's actually creating a Pavlovian response to breathing deeply. So what happens is you sit and yoga, it's like meditation practice. So you sit and you meditate and you breathe deeply. And you know how they always tell you to just follow the little, you know, allow your thoughts to be clouds floating through the sky or logs flowing down a river or whatever. And you practice staying in the center while your thoughts go by. And every time we breathe deeply, we come out of fight or flight and we go into a relaxed healing mode when we meditate or we're doing yoga, kundalini yoga, whatever we're doing. And what happens is we develop a witness mind. We actually develop it like we develop a bicep. And it's really important that we actually do it, that we don't think we just, oh, I can't meditate. It's like, no, you're developing a muscle. You're actually developing a response in your body, because yoga, tantra, all these things are meant to actually improve our life. They're not interesting by themselves. There's nothing interesting about being able to meditate for 2 hours. What's interesting is when we create this Pavlovian response, that all of a sudden something's going on in our life, in our relationships with our children, and we stop for, like you said, like 1 second even, and we say, and we breathe deeply, and instantly we are on the mat. And we're able to watch the thoughts going through. We're able to observe our emotions, and we're given this space of that we can receive wisdom. And we can say, and we don't even have to say it. It's sort of like that when you ask a question of your highest consciousness, of God, however you see it, before you've even finished asking, the answer is already there. You just have to have that moment to go,
right,
what do I do? And so I have a book, Tantric Intimacy, that is all my teachings. And the first few chapters are all about love and redefining love completely. And one of the chapters is about philia. And it's about this idea of creating sanctuary with our children. And so my kids would always tell you to this day that I never punished them, but I would take them to the couch and we would talk. And we would talk and we would sit there. It didn't matter how old they were. We would just sit there. And because for me, I really didn't think I had any answers. And it didn't matter whether they were just, one was taking too long in the trampoline. It didn't matter. I didn't know. I was so worried about screwing them up. Like, I was so worried that one day they'd be laying on a psychiatrist's couch going, oh, my mom said this thing and it's in my head. And I was terrified of doing that. And so we would sit on the couch and I would listen to them. But what I was really doing was listening inside. Like, I was really like, what am I supposed to do here? Like, what is the answer? And it was always fascinating. The answers sometimes would be, go bake cookies with them. Go for a drive. Watch a movie together. Cuddle on the couch. Or some bizarre story would come up from my childhood. And I'd be like, or like when they were teenagers, right? And all of a sudden I'd be like, I remember this time. And I would just randomly tell some bizarre story. And all of a sudden, you know, and my kids were both very different. Like, my son to this day holds his cards really close. Like, for you to get anything out of him, he's got to be in crisis. And
that's my daughter.
You're going to be.
Yeah.
Right. And my, my daughter, she'll like, the funniest thing is she was about 16 one day and she was just premenstrual, angry at the world, whatever. And she came and I was like, come on, honey, let's go sit on the couch for a minute. And she sat there for all of like 5 seconds before she just said, Mom, sometimes I'm just having a bad day. I'm just a teenager. It's just kind of, it's
hilarious.
So
I don't need to be on the couch.
And we just kind of laughed about it. It was like, awesome. Yeah. And then it was over.
That's awesome.
Right?
Yes.
But all you say, all it takes is this little window of remembering that this is just an experience we're having. Just remember for a moment that each one of us has such great wisdom to draw on. And then all of a sudden, what was once this horrific thing is just diffused.
And it's, and the cool thing to understand is the act of doing it, you don't even need the answer, but the act of just being present with your kids is already, you've already given them an incredible gift that your parents, God bless them, probably didn't give you because it just wasn't Maslow's hierarchy of the needs at the time, right? We're so blessed that we have such a mental crisis. Like, we're so blessed to be in a place where our physical needs are that well taken care of, where now the biggest epidemic in the country is mental health in the world, right? Which is in its own a huge thing to tackle. But I also look at that as, that's a great thing because it means that we're elevating and we're getting more of an understanding that there's another part to us to make whole. This is a great segue into the intuition. You mentioned that when you were present with your kids and you kind of insinuated your third eye, but what you really were doing is like trying to take in the presence of the moment and just give yourself a second just to sit with it and feel versus trying to overthink. Or earlier you did the, I think of this example, and it was like the human doing versus the human being. And we're called human beings, but we don't do that very well. We're really good at the human doing, right? Like, that's where we think we're supposed to be because society has told us all, whether you have a male genitalia or a female genitalia, that you're supposed to do something and you're supposed to produce and you're supposed to add value, or you're supposed to sit back and let it happen to you, right? But what you did was you sat there on the couch. What I do think is funny is you did the couch before, so your kids didn't have to do the couch later with the psychiatrist. So that was great. That was not lost on me. I thought that was hilarious. I'm like, I wonder if she had a pad. And then you let your intuition tell you what the next steps were. Now, I will make a generalization that I think we don't do an amazing job as a society of intuiting and feeling. Probably because we don't give ourselves the permission to, or we write it off as like the gut feeling or the, you know, the whims that come in from the clear blue sky don't have as much clout as our logic. And that is extremely myopic. What do you do with your students to help them start to develop more of an intuition? And then how do you see this coming into play in the home scenario?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing we have to do is actually change our philosophy of how we see the world. We've been sort of trained that the world is like a machine that has very clear-cut rules and it's definitive. And because we think, it's sort of like we've tried to control nature, and it's sort of like growing up, you know, for me, if you were in a woman, for example, like I actually went to school for mathematics, and there was actually a scholarship program if a woman went into sciences, like it was a big deal because that's all that matters. So we have this idea that we can use our logical mind to process the world in the most efficient and highest way, because the world is a machine. The world is a logical place. This again is the absolute oppression of the feminine truth, that the world is actually chaos. The world is actually feminine. In like in Blackfoot wisdom, they actually see that God is chaos. Spirit is chaos, right? So all the building blocks of reality is chaos. And so imagine instead, you imagine that the world was chaos. The world was wild. The world was not this machine-like thing. Well, how do you navigate chaos? Mm. Well, the only way to navigate chaos, and chaos isn't negative, chaos is just all life. The potential of reality. The only way you can navigate chaos is through intuition. Because you can literally go, it's sort of like navigating infinity. How do you navigate infinity? We believe in a limited model, right? So then all of a sudden, how do you do it? You sit quietly and you say, I could go in one of 1,000 directions. And you literally sit and you feel it out, right?
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, or just pops in your head.
And exactly, it pops in your head and you're like, really? And the crazy thing about intuition is you start following it. So this was what happened when I was sick. When I was 29, my teacher taught me, and it was funny. He said, one day I was lying on his table and he said, Katrina, you've got to learn to pray. Well, and I had all kinds of issues with the church, so that really pissed me off. But I was like, he goes, no, none of that. He says, you need to learn how to ask. You need to learn how to listen, which is a really big deal. Like, which voice do I listen to? And then you have to have the faith to actually do it. Well, the crazy thing is you start doing that in your life, miracles start happening. Like, this is when serendipity goes wild. And to the point that my kids would just joke that I would be sitting at the dinner table and I'd say, you know, it'd be really cool. And then like, this would happen. You know, that would be really cool. And literally the next day, someone would drive in the lane and say, here. And they would just like hand it to you. And my kids were like, yeah, that's totally normal. That's mom's world. That's how it works. And every time it happens, it gets easier and easier to trust. And when we stop trusting this logical mind that believes the world is like some kind of system that you can analyze, and we actually go, no, the world is much more interesting, much more colorful, much further beyond our understanding, suddenly there's great value in trusting our intuition. And in terms of parenting, now you have this infinite being in front of you. I don't understand the infinite being inside my own body, let alone the infinite being sitting in front of me who I love more than anyone on the planet. What would I possibly do besides follow my intuition in trying to guide them? What else have I got?
Beautiful.
So I trust it implicitly.
That's awesome. And you've obviously have been led down a path to take baby steps toward that. I love what you just said. The way I kind of feel like the Matrix is going through my mind, and like horses running in a race in like a certain alley, but like whether it's reticular activating system, if you want to go scientific, or more quantum, if you're more in the ethereal, basically we get what self-fulfilling prophecy. We get what we focus on. And if you decide to have a very limited vernacular with the way that you perceive the world, then you're going to have a very small, not being bad, but just limited in number, skill sets and ways to have creative solutions for that. So what you said that I thought was so cool is like, if you understand that this is not a problem to be solved, and the logic is one way, but not the only way, you can kind of blur the lines and let them dissolve a little bit enough to be like, and I really just think of a little kid standing in front of a blank canvas and just like, cool, like, woo, you know, like, what do I do? And just starting to go. And it's like, you can really feel it. You can just feel what feels light. And sometimes I do this with my kids, right? Developing intuition is very important. because I feel like I do a really good job of being a human doing. So I have to put steps into my life to be a human being and to show them how to do it. It's not innate to me. I think it used to be. Then I felt like I had to produce and make money and pay mortgages and all the things and, you know, get investment properties and I just didn't feel as whole. And so I had to like put stuff into my life to do this. So I would take my daughter on meditation classes with me, and we would practice a game we call send receive, where like we'd think of a number or a color and I'd hold it in my thoughts. And I wouldn't just think like the number 8. I would think of like a stop sign, like big red 8 sides, or like the infinity symbol. And I would just really focus on this visuals and just feel them, as silly as that sounds. And then my daughter would be like, oh, it's a red number 8. And I'm like, the amount of times this worked was so cool. And we realized that like we had a pretty good telepathic connection to each other. And I do this with my son all the time, where I'll put cards down and it's kind of like the memory game, but not. And I'll just say like, you know, I'll kind of give him an idea of like what's in one of the cards and which one. And then like maybe I'll think of like 3 things and I'll put some signal to the middle, like mentally, and he'll pick that card up. And so I work on intuition with them, because in today's day and age, I think the sexy term for this is manifestation, but it's an intrinsic power that we all have, whether you believe it or not. Like whether you believe in divinity or not, God or not, it's there, right? And again, you can choose to believe and have more to play with in terms of leeway and how you navigate and play with the world, solve problems or just have fun, or you can choose not to believe it. And then, you know, what was the Malcolm X thing? If you believe in that, if you stand for nothing, if you believe in nothing, you'll fall for everything, right? Then where are you left with from a understanding perspective? But manifestation to me has gotten so much popularity in the years, current years, but it's exactly what you just described, Katrina. It's the feeling so connected to the possibilities of what is that stuff just pops into your life, because there's no way for it not to, because the, you know, you can say the law of attraction or however you want to define it. But to me, it's like, you're just putting out a mental, in your mind, you're putting out like an electronic signature. And then now the world is showing you back that signature. It's like when you have developed a very simple practice, I journal every day and I write just what I'm grateful for, just like a list of like all the things I'm grateful for, from feeling the sun on my face, the breeze in my hair, my son's kiss, you know, and he's 3. So it's always like wet and sticky and like, I love it. To just like the feeling of my dog's hair when he like lays on me, and I just write it all out. You go to bed feeling so whole and so wholesome versus the mental chatter. You said this earlier, you don't know which voice to listen to. If we don't take, and here's the divine feminine, divine masculine, but in a very holistic way, if we don't decide to be our own structure, we are leaving it up to society to program us. So we need to self-program. I read this like Napoleon Hill thing like in college, and I was like, oh, wow, it's so true. They told me in the audio book, like, listen to the next commercials that come on. We are instilling poverty and brokenness in our society. And I was listening to, and I was in LA at the time, and it was like rims and weed and like different things. And I was like, whoa. And I just shut off the radio. And I'm like, I got to be very conscious of what I program myself with. And it's the same thing with our kids, right? So the intuition, I'm sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but I think what you did is you're teaching them how to intuit. And again, with many things in parenting, you don't have to do much. You just have to embody it. Just be it. And then they learn it. So do you have any other like tips on intuition or things that you've seen work with either yourself, your kids, or any of your clients that you teach with developing it?
Yeah. For me personally, I think it's really fun. Like you said, like there's baby steps. There's things like I literally to this day, even if, you know, how am I going to drive to the grocery store? I kind of close my eyes. Like, I don't close my eyes. You're driving along, I'm just going to like turn right here for, you know, I kind of feel like I'm going to, and like just silly things like left or right, you know, and you just, and it doesn't matter whether something magical happens. It doesn't mean that you suddenly saw a white squirrel and, oh my God, I knew my intuition was going to, you can't be attached to it. it's all about developing the inner mechanism that says, what does it feel like? What does a yes feel like? That's the only question. And so with children, for example, it's really honoring their little, I'm going to say little, but their decision-making abilities. Like kids, as they get older, there's a limited number of things that they can make decisions about. We are the parents. We do create the safety, the structure, and all that kind of thing. But within their world, what can they choose? And it's things like that. Like I remember when my kids were little and they would be like, you know, so-and-so wants to come over. And I would sit with them and say, do you want them to come over? Because we had a farm, so it was a big deal. Like we had to drive 20 minutes to go get them, and it was a big deal for a friend to come over. And you'd see them kind of go, well, they really want to. And you're like, do you want them to? Well, no, not really. Well, then let's make another day. And they're like there's something about honoring the tiniest little things. My son, for example, the one that holds his cards close, when he was young, you know, he's a people pleaser like me. So, you know, you would ask him a question, you'd say, you know, do you want to do this? And you'd see him almost unconsciously scan you to see what you wanted him to say. Mm-hmm. And I would say, Aaron, do you want to do this? Oh yeah. Yeah. I want to do this. But he always had stomach aches. That was his Achilles heel. And I'd say, does your stomach want to do it? Oh no, my stomach doesn't want to do it. And he'd be like, then I don't think you want to do it. Well, no, I don't want to do it. And this is interesting for all of us, right? Because you mentioned earlier, like what feels light and all that kind of thing. We all have little Achilles heels that we think is a weakness, but it's actually a sensitivity to truth, right? And if something goes on and suddenly like, oh, I just got a headache, or, oh, I feel kind of sick, or now I'm suddenly tired, to pay attention to that and say, why am I suddenly tired? Why am I suddenly feeling a little down? What's going on? And then you kind of sit within and you say, wait a minute, do I really want to go to this thing tonight? Do I really want to do that obligation? And for me, I have to play tricks with myself because I'm a yes person. I'll say yes so fast. And so what I have to do is I have to play the negative game, that if that thing was canceled, would I be relieved or would I be disappointed?
Ooh. Ooh.
That's my cool. Number one trick.
Try that. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And so it's the same with my kids. It would be like, do you really want to do it? Or is there something else? And it's fascinating for children to even be asked.
Yeah.
You know, like they can't answer everything. It's very important to give them things that are actually within their scope, but then they always get to choose and you can kind of say, but they also watch us, right? They watch, like my daughter, she's so funny. When she was about 18, she came to me and she said, you know, Mom, you were the most annoying mother.
Because that's awesome. But she's doing your job.
But she's... Because she said, I would come up to you to ask you a question, whether can I do this thing? And I would already know what you were going to say. Like there's something about, and not because I always said yes or I always said no, but because every time they would ask me a question, I would kind of pause for a minute and I would look off into the distance and I'd be like, I don't think that's a good idea. And she'd be like, darn it. She already knew what the answer was because she also had already tapped in, but she was hoping I would say yes,
validated.
Even though, right. So what it did was when we honor truth, like it's funny, like one of my favorite things is the word that. Satya. Satya is truth. Satya, this is Gandhi, Satyagraha, to stand in one's truth. Truth isn't just my opinion in this minute. This is what is my aligned reality in this moment? And the aligned reality is, yeah, that sounds great. Or I don't think that's the way. And when they witness us doing our little litmus strip from a very young child, especially from when they're young, they already know what they feel what we're doing. And then they do it and they walk up to me and they're always like, I know what you're going to say, but I'm going to ask you anyway.
So good.
And I was a yes mom too. Like I would err on the side of yes. So if I said no, they were
really, you felt it. You felt it.
They knew it was actually a no.
And I love the distinction of truth, because I think in society that word has been very muddied to mean universal truth. If I believe it, you have to believe it. Therefore, it's the truth. How many billions of perspectives live on this planet? Not just the human beings, human doings, but the trees and the animals. And like, it's all relative. Truth, you said it so eloquently, is what feels in service to you, right? Like what is in your highest alignment? And sometimes that changes, but oftentimes it's your truth. So, you know, then I love what you said about tapping into your unique child's signposts or Achilles heel or just sensitivities. And then using that as a way for them to bounce things off of, to start to develop that intuition. I thought that was amazing. So I know we got to wrap here in a second. I really, really would love to give you an opportunity to share with parents. I know you have several books. Like, where can they find you? What do you do? How do they interact with you? Tell us all the good stuff.
Yeah, thank you. So my main website is katrinaboss.ca. And there you'll find courses, Kundalini yoga, all my books.
Yes, I love Kundalini.
In the Land of Intuition. And I've like 6 books out there. They're all available on Amazon or wherever you buy books, in paperback, ebook, audiobook, read by me. The first book, this is the book, What If You Could Skip the Cancer? And this one is all about following your intuition. And this was actually my journey with Russ Lumsden, my teacher. The vehicle for me was cancer, but it's actually really just how do we go from our head to our heart and really listen. And then the book, my book, Tantric Intimacy, this one is all about love and relationships. And then my most recent one is Divine Union of the Masculine and Feminine. And this one really redefines the masculine and feminine as it applies within, as it applies in relationships, in intimacy, in relationship with our children. And those are really the nicest places to start. And I have a huge YouTube channel, and it's just Katrina Boss. And so there's hundreds of videos there all about parenting and relationships and all the things. So,
That's awesome. I just love the parallel between spirituality, self-development, and parenting, and just being more present in yourself. So, Katrina, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for the work that you do. This has been so fun. We were chatting away, and I'm like, we should probably start recording because this has been awesome. People should probably hear all the gold nuggets you're dropping. But you're wonderful, and I just wish you all the best on the journey that and spreading that message of joy and love to people. And I can't wait to delve more into Tantra, because I think Tantra is such a misunderstood fun thing, or Tantra. But I do this game with my kids where we'll just sit there and one person will be in the middle and everybody else has their hand on that person. And we just tell them things we love about them. And we just let the energy like flow. Mm. Like, again, not a sex practice at all. A very loving divine touch. And what better way to teach your kids? So we may have Katrina on again, because I think there's a lot more we can explore, but this was great. So Katrina, thank you again for being here. Greatly appreciate it. And then parents, you guys know the deal. We'll be here every Thursday until birth happens. And then we'll be here every Thursday a few months after that. So we'll have a good backlog of videos to keep us busy during that time. But can't wait to share this journey with you guys. And until the next perfect time, thank you for being here. Stay beautiful and stay inspired. Bye, guys. Thank you.